Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is JNYGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's news collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, and Ellie Sturton. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. Last weekend, the Kingston Walk to End ALS managed to raise over double their original fundraising goal, while also hitting all-time records in both funds raised and attendance. Each June, which also happens to be ALS Awareness Month, communities across the country participate in the Walk to End ALS organized by the ALS Society of Canada, showing support for the nearly 4,000 Canadians currently living with ALS. The original fundraising goal set for Kingston's Walk was $45,000. Before the end of the day, they had already raised more than double that and hit a new all-time record, with the grand total being $117,752. Sarah Reedman with the ALS Society of Canada, who organized the Kingston chapter of the walk, shared her thoughts on the accomplishment.
It was phenomenal. Even going into that day, I was sort of re-clicking every minute of every day just to see where we were going. And for me, it felt wonderful because the pressure's off me a little bit. So, to reach goal. But it did, you know, and it's a big push towards the bigger goal and we're getting there. So it was wonderful.
Nearly 300 attendees took part, including new teams that made a big impact right out the gate and returning teams that gave it their all.
So this year we did have one big family that came out. So we had a newly diagnosed lady whose team and family and friends really got behind her. And their fundraising goal, from my understanding, to start with was 5,000. Then they'd crushed that, so they increased it to 20,000. And then they just absolutely crushed it. So we did have a couple of new teams on board this year, that team being one of them. And then another lady joined and her team crushed it as well. So, and you know what, each walk goes in ebbs and flows. Some years we just have a big turnout, and other years not so much. It really depends what's going on in that person's life. And other things come up in the meantime, right? So some people end up coming for a few years, taking a break, coming back. But really the biggest thing is it's when somebody is diagnosed, this is their family and friends' way of showing their love and support for them. It's how I got involved in the first place with the ALS Society, actually, was joining a walk.
According to Reedman, the historic totals directly reflect the energy on the day.
The energy was fantastic. And you could just tell that people were so enthusiastic because they were showing up early. Registration starts at 10. People were showing up at 9:30. They were itching to go. It was wonderful to see. And I think as well, with one team being so big, and in fact, the another team was sort of fairly big as well, the energy was fantastic. The weather was great. That makes a difference as well. The location is perfect. The route along the lake there. And we tried to keep it upbeat, right? It's a coming together of the community. So we try to make it a positive event because it is a positive event. And although we know what we're there for, supporting, the idea is for everybody to come together and celebrate together and just be part of that community. So the energy was fantastic. Since 2003, I think this final year now, we have pushed over $1 million that's been raised throughout the years through the Kingston Walk. So that, you know, Kingston's it's a very powerful community. It's a wonderful community, and there's a lot of loyalty, which is lovely to see.
The community's generosity was especially impressive in a time when fundraising isn't always easy.
We really do appreciate and recognize how much people put themselves out to ask people to donate to their cause, because there's a lot of causes, right? There's a lot of people have a lot of particular love towards a certain cause. And in this economical climate as well, the fact that people are still willing to put themselves out and say, hey, listen, I know times are hard for a lot of people, but would you support my fundraising initiative, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful to see. We're so grateful. Honestly, we really are.
Every dollar raised will go directly towards research and supporting those living with ALS.
The donations are typically that come in are 50% goes towards research and 50% goes directly to supporting people living with ALS. So I'm a community lead. So my role is to provide resources and support for people living with ALS in the Central East and Southeast region. So Kingston being in the Southeast region. So I have a caseload of people and families living with ALS. My role is to visit them in their homes, make referrals to community health partners. I work really collaboratively with the ALS clinic in Kingston, and as well Sunnybrook, because that's in my area. So a lot of direct support. I facilitate support groups. Our organization has a support group program. We also have an equipment loan program. So anybody that needs mobility equipment in their home, we can provide that for them. So, and it doesn't cost them anything. So it goes towards a lot of that. And then as well, 50% goes towards research into therapies and treatments.
Looking ahead, the ALS Society of Canada is already preparing for next year's walk.
Same place next year. It's an annual event, but it is just a lovely community event. We would love to have anybody that would like to volunteer if they're not necessarily comfortable with raising funds and putting in a team. Volunteers are the heart and soul of our events. We could not do it without volunteers. So if anybody, they can just connect with me ahead of next year's event, and that would be amazing.
To learn more, donate, or get involved in next year's walk, visit the ALS Society of Canada website. The city is making progress on a number of initiatives to protect residents from extreme heat. On February 4th, 2025, Council passed a motion to get the ball rolling on several initiatives geared towards preparing the city for rising temperatures, including setting a maximum temperature for residential rental units and creating a heat response plan. At their Tuesday night meeting, the city's Environment, Infrastructure, and Transportation Policies Committee took a look at the completed community heat response plan, created in collaboration with the Southeast Health Unit. Kingston is experiencing more frequent and intense heat events. According to the plan, by 2050, the number of days over 30 degrees Celsius is projected to rise from 6 to 22 annually, and days over 32 degrees Celsius are expected to increase from 1.2 to 8.3. These conditions not only threaten public health, but also put pressure on city infrastructure and essential services. The Community Heat Response Plan outlines the actions to be taken when Environment and Climate Change Canada issues a heat alert, focusing on mitigating heat-related health risks, especially for vulnerable populations. As for immediate actions outlined in the report, the core focus of the response plan is the establishment and promotion of cooling centers. Upon a heat warning, the city opens designated cooling centers and ensures that all city-funded emergency shelters also serve as cool-down locations. With this being the central focus in the plan, citizens raised concerns about the accessibility of cooling centers. Kingston resident Tara Kaner spoke before the committee and raised concerns about potential barriers to accessing these centers, including transportation, limited hours of operation, and social stigma.
Cooling centers during heat waves are part of the solution, as studies suggest. However, there is little known about who uses them and whether they are effective in reducing heat illness and death. Obstacles to utilizing cooling centers are multiple. My request to you is that you take the time to consider the barriers before you endorse the Community Heat Response Plan. Please address the difficulties so that the cooling centers will be effective.
In response, the city's manager of climate leadership, Julie Salter-Keen, noted that the plan will be subject to continuous updates, including looking into what data can be collected while preserving the privacy of those using the centers and offering more public transportation to make the centers more effective. In addition to cooling centers, the city will also be extending public pool hours during heat events and continuing its Keep Cool While It's Hot campaign, which began in 2024 to educate residents about the risks associated with extreme heat and provide guidance on preventing and managing heat-related illnesses. Beyond immediate relief efforts, the Heat Response Plan also outlines longer-term strategies. These include strategic tree planting and green infrastructure to reduce urban heat, enhancing shade and thermal comfort in public areas like parks, playgrounds, schools, and the downtown core, and preparing for poor air quality during heat events, including clean air shelters and mask distribution. Looking ahead, community members also requested updates on progress on other items in the February motion to make the community more climate resilient. Salter-Keen noted that the proposed bylaw amendments required to set a maximum indoor temperature for rental units with AC will be reviewed by the Policy Committee in July. Extending the mandate to buildings that do not currently have air conditioning installed will be dependent on the findings of the City of Toronto, currently investigating the legal viability of applying such a bylaw to all residential units. This is expected to be complete by the end of the year. Councillor Wendy Stephen wrapped up the discussion, noting the comments from residents and what's to come for the city in the next few months.
I just want to acknowledge Tara made some really good points that there are some actual legit barriers to people using cooling centers. And I think it's worth acknowledging that is definitely true. I think it's also important to acknowledge that the heat response plan is one piece of a bigger picture. I fully agree. It's not sufficient. It's not enough on its own. But I think that this is one piece that is a step in the right direction, at least in formalizing this. I completely agree. I think that the missing piece is going to be when we hear back about the City of Toronto. And I think that'll really put things in perspective of what we can and can't do so that we can hopefully move forward with some really meaningful action.
The heat response plan will be reviewed annually in partnership with the Southeast Health Unit to ensure it remains effective and up to date. Residents can access current information on heat warnings, cooling center hours and locations, and signs of heat-related illness on the City of Kingston's website. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
This is Jesse Bell coming in live from Richardson Memorial Stadium, catching the second of a three-game slate as the Kingston Grenadiers look to defend home turf against a litany of foes. The U14 squad played the North Halton Crimson Tide, and the U16 squad looks to improve their 3-1 record against the Brampton Bulldogs. It is a packed house here at Richardson, perhaps an effective test run for the upcoming Gales home opener on August 23rd. It's a beautiful day for some football, and the Grenadiers look to put on a show for their home crowd. After a bit of a slow start in the first quarter, both the Kingston Grenadiers and the Brampton Bulldogs put points on the board to end the first half, albeit in two very different ways. The Grenadiers preferred to ground and pound, relying on their star running back Declan Cowan, where the Brampton Bulldogs got it done largely via the passing game. At the end of the first half, the Grenadiers had a commanding 22-8 lead over the Brampton Bulldogs. After a scoreless third quarter that saw each team trade field position, the Grenadiers put the game away late with a 33-yard field goal from Griffin Fair, younger brother of former CFL kicker Campbell Fair. The U16 Grenadiers moved to 4-1 on the season, delighting the hometown Richardson crowd. If you're interested in more content from Richardson Stadium, head on over to at CFRC Power Plays on Instagram and check out CFRC at the Lang, a first-time partnership between CFRC and Queens Football, providing unprecedented access to the team, its players, and the incredible community members that make up the rich tapestry of Queens Football. From Richardson Stadium, this is Jesse Bell signing off. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Monday, June 16th, daytime high of 23 degrees and a mix of sun and cloud dropping down to 16 overnight. Tuesday, June 17th, we're going to see a high of 25 and some cloud coverage coming in later in the day, which will lead to a 30% chance of precipitation overnight dropping down to 18 degrees. That rain will increase on Wednesday, June 18th, same high of 25, but a 60% chance of precipitation in the region, dropping back down to 18 overnight. Thursday, June 19th, we're going to see a daytime high of 23 degrees with some occasional morning rain with a thunderstorm mixed in, dropping down to 13 overnight. Friday, June 20th, nicer day here in the city of Kingston, partly sunny, less humid, 20 degrees is the daytime high. Saturday, June 21st, just in time for Skeleton Park Arts Fest, daytime high of 22 in a mix of sun and cloud, and that sun remains steady heading into June 22nd, that's the Sunday for Skeleton Park Arts Fest, daytime high of 23, but it will be quite humid. Moving into the start of next week, Monday, June 23rd, daytime high of 25 degrees with a high likelihood of a strong afternoon thunder shower, so keep your eye out for that. And Tuesday, June 24th, going to see a decent amount of rain here in the city of Kingston with a daytime high of 24 degrees.
This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. The LaSalle Causeway's summer and fall closure schedule has been updated by Public Services and Procurement Canada. Reminder that the summer dates of the LaSalle Causeway's closure are as follows: June 22nd and 29th, July 1st, 6th, 13th, 20th, and 27th, August 3rd, 10th, 17th, 24th, and 31st, and September 7th, the causeway will be closed from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. on each of those summer dates. As for the fall, the current dates are September 21st, October 5th, 14th, and 19th, and November 2nd and 16th, the time of closure being 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. on each of those dates. Here are this week's relevant road closures. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Aberdeen Street, William to Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Cassidy Street, Montreal to Maple is closed until June 20th as part of the ongoing intersection improvements of Montreal and John Counter. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Garrett Road, 6th concession to Sand Hill, is closed June 17th and 18th from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for a culvert replacement. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria, is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen, is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. And Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett, is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Here are some ongoing delays to be aware of. Abbeydon Road, middle to Highway 2, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Bayridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure and intersection upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Woodbine to Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes landscaping work on Collins Bay Road. Florida Road, Henderson to Wilton, expect delays while the contractor is completing work on the annual surface treatment contract. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users and to accommodate increased traffic from the Wabin Crossing. Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction for sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Now coming up, we'll have a look at some great community events running in Kingston and the area this week. On Monday, head to Time Out Bar and Bistro to celebrate Kingston writer Meg Freer at her new book launch. She's the poet in residence with the McDonald Institute, and this event is a great way to support local writing. If you're in the mood to move, join the Queen's Swing Dance Club at the Spire from 7 to 10 p.m. There will be lessons, social dancing, and good company for dancers of all skill levels. On Tuesday, swing by the Tet Center from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. for the Tet Tuesdays 2024. Exhibition. Hosted by Kingston Young Professionals, this free evening features local artwork, refreshments, and a relaxed community vibe. On Wednesday, get ready for a blast of 90s nostalgia at the Grad Club with Now That's What I Call Drag from 8:30 to 11 p.m. This themed drag show supports Trans Family Kingston and features a fabulous lineup of local performers. Wear your best 90s look for a chance to win the costume contest. On Thursday, bring the kids in a blanket to Stories in the Square at Springer Market Square from 10:30 to 11 a.m. It's a free morning of songs and stories for all ages. Later, Queerioki takes over Daft Brewing at 8 p.m. for a fun and inclusive night of karaoke hosted in a welcoming space for LGBTQ+ folks and allies. And at Springer Market Square in the evening, there's Movies in the Square, Pride Edition, starting at 8:30 p.m. with a screening of Heightened Scrutiny, a powerful documentary about trans rights and justice. On Friday, Theatre Kingston is hosting its fourth annual fundraiser at the historic Edgewater House. The Garden and Emerald theme party kicks off at 7 p.m. with food, music, and dancing under the stars. Also on Friday, head to Carlo Estates Winery in Prince Edward County for bingo from 6 to 9 p.m., hosted by Rowena Way. And presented by Skeleton Park Arts Festival, the Walks of Life open mic takes place at Next Church from 7:30 to 9 p.m. All ages are welcome to perform or just enjoy the music, comedy, and poetry. On Saturday, celebrate National Indigenous Peoples Day in Confederation Park from 1 to 6 p.m. It's a free all-ages event with music, dance, and storytelling from artists including Takani, Allin Drum Circle, and Noel Miracle. At 2 p.m., Candace Weapon and Sadiqa Demeyer lead a free poetry and performance workshop at Next Church called Page to Stage, Voicing Your Verses. Skeleton Park Arts Festival is also in full swing on Saturday in McBurney Park from 10 to 6 p.m. Skeleton Park Arts Festival is also in full swing on Saturday in McBurney Park from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Browse the Fat Goose Craft Fair, check out local vendors and community booths, and enjoy art making with the Department of Illumination. You can also see live mural painting by artist Aaron Forsyth. If you're in the mood for a comedic poetry show, Gem Rolls, Adventures in Canadian Parking Lots runs at the Tet Center at both 1 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. And on Sunday, Skeleton Park continues at McBurney Park with more crafts, food, art, and mural painting. Activities run from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. and are open to everyone. If you're feeling brave, Ghosts and Good Boys Walking Tour departs downtown at 2 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. These $40 spooky tours benefit the Kingston Humane Society, and yes, dogs are welcome on the evening tour. Have a local event that you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via cfrc.ca. Hey folks, it's Ellie Sturton, and coming up are your live music events happening around town this week. On Monday, folks can head to the RCHA from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. for Jazz Society Mondays, featuring Inner Harbor Jazz playing tunes inspired by Billie Holiday and Carmen McRae. Cover is just $5. Later that evening, the Morning Doves play a free set of funky jazz at Musiki Cafe from 8 to 11 p.m. On Tuesday, Trellis HIV and Community Care hosts Indigenous Drumming from 1 to 3 p.m. This free event is open to all ages and is a great chance to connect through rhythm and community. In the evening, head to Time Out Bar and Bistro from 6 to 8 p.m. to catch Deborah Sherman's performing pop and rock covers and originals. That show is also free. On Wednesday, musicians can join Buckle Blues Jam at The Buckle from 7 to 10 p.m. There's no cover and all are welcome to play. The RCHA features a blues showcase from 7 to 10 p.m. with Hendrika and Savannah Shea. Or swing by Time Out Bar and Bistro to hear Chris Strong from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. On Thursday, the Cove Inn is hosting Original Thursdays with Al Lerman from 5 to 8 p.m. He's a Juno-winning blues and roots artist and entries by donation with a suggested cover of $20. Over on Wolf Island, Open Season brings Hugh Christopher Brown, Joey Wright, and Jason Mercer together at Hotel Wolf Island from 7:45 to 9:45 p.m. for a genre-bending night of live music. At the Mansion, Pitch and Pour starts at 8 p.m. with performances by education students. That one is 19+ with a small cover at the door. On Friday, start your weekend with Happy Hour TGIF at the RCHA from 4 to 6 p.m. featuring the Smokin' Roosters. Stick around afterwards for $5 dates at 8 p.m. playing crowd pleasers and classic covers for just $5. At Time Out Bar and Bistro, Riley Murrigan performs from 3 to 5 p.m. followed by Paula Wood from 6 to 8 p.m. Hotel Wolf Island hosts the Retro Kings at 8:30 p.m. for their new album release show. You can also check out the Food Bank fundraiser at Overtime Sports Bar starting at 8:30 p.m. with live music from several local bands. Entry is by a $10 donation and all proceeds support the partners in mission. On Saturday, the Skeleton Park Arts Festival takes over McBurney Park from 7:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. This free all-ages event features yoga with live music, a kids show with splashin' boots, and performances by Anthea Fever, Zune, Trash Panda, Brass Band, and headliner Candace Weapon. Also on Saturday, the Creekside Music Festival runs from 2 to 8 p.m. at the Creekside Bar and Grill with live music all afternoon. At the Cove Inn, Young Petty Stones brings a tribute to Neil Young, Tom Petty, and the Rolling Stones from 7 to 11 p.m. The Broom Factory hosts a summer kickoff concert starting at 7:30 p.m., and Hotel Wolf Island presents Mike Guinney and Julia Finnegan also at 7:30 p.m. Folks can hear live music from Christopher Jackson at the Princess Street Promenade between noon and 4 p.m. Lynn Miles, Rebecca Campbell, and Keith Glass perform at Leopard Frog Barn from 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. And Mimi Obonsawin plays a free outdoor show at 9 p.m. at Sydenham and Princess, and DJ Cacao spins at Musiki from 8 to 11 p.m. There's also a fundraiser at Spearhead Brewery Brewery from 4 to 10 p.m. with live music, a silent auction, and a DJ set. On Sunday, Skeleton Park continues all day at McBurney Park with music, yoga, and a brass band parade. Sounding off on Queer Joy happens at Next Church at 2 p.m. with performances by Tiny Horse and Trash Panda Brass Band. Live Music Sundays at Finkel's Shore Park runs from 2 to 5 p.m. with Clem Chesterfield, Mellow Lily, and the Marion Drexler Band. Over at Hotel Wolf Island, jazz pop artist Tia Brazda performs on the patio from 3 to 6 p.m. You can also celebrate Pride at Compass Rose Suites starting at 7:30 p.m. with Latin dance music from DJ Linz and food from Jenny Bonsai. Have a local concert that you would like covered on CFRC's website and our news programming? Contact us today via cfrc.ca.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.